The following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
From the Associated Press, I'm Megan Crane, and this is Ground Game, a podcast about politics from the ground up. Each week, we bring you a conversation with AP reporters who live in the communities they cover. This week, we're talking about the race for governor in Georgia. Whoever wins an upcoming runoff on the Republican side will face Stacey Abrams. She stands to become the first Black woman elected governor in the United States. Here she is accepting her party's nomination in May.
But let me tell you, I am so grateful to the thousands of you in this room and around this state and around this country who have joined me on this drive to history. We are writing the next chapter of Georgia's future, where no one is unseen, no one is unheard, and no one is uninspired. We are writing a history of a Georgia where we prosper together.
Joining us on the phone to talk about this race and Abrams standing on the national stage is Bill Barrow, an AP national political reporter who is based in Atlanta. We are also joined by Aaron Haynes-Wack, AP's national race and ethnicity writer. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Bill, can you start us off by telling us who is Stacey Abrams? How did she get to this point?
Yes, Stacey Abrams is a 44-year-old Atlanta attorney running for governor, and her most recent political post was serving in the state legislature. She was the House Minority Leader in the General Assembly, which is controlled overwhelmingly by Republicans. Stacey spent several terms leading the Democrats there, honing her skills as a political operator, having to decide when to marshal Democrats as the opposition and when to cut deals with Republicans and try to get the best outcomes possible. And those years have now led into her statewide bid for governor. Before she was in politics, she came up through Atlanta City Hall as a political staffer. She has been a private practice attorney and also has been a small businesswoman. And a fun detail on the side, Stacey is a romance novelist, writing under a pseudonym.
Although she's open about it now.
Yes. It's known. It's just a fun side gig, as she tells it. She won the Democratic nomination by an overwhelming margin. It was thought to be a competitive race. She was running against another one of her former House colleagues, Stacey Evans.
The Battle of the Stacey's, right?
Yes, it was the Battle of the Stacey's that had served several years together in the House, worked together on some things. And then ran against each other for governor. It was a real test of the Democratic old guard, with a lot of the kind of the older, whiter, more male, moneyed interest in the Democratic Party that aligned behind Stacey Evans, who was white. And they never came out and said it, but there was obviously some concern there that they wondered how well can an African American woman do. And at least in the Democratic primary, the answer was very well. Stacey Abrams won the primary going away in May, winning almost 3 out of 4 votes among Georgia Democrats.
So what challenges does she face in particular headed into this race?
First and foremost, independent of who Stacey is just that this is still a Republican-leaning state. It is entirely controlled by Republicans, not by the electoral margins that we see in some other Deep South states like Alabama and Mississippi, or South Carolina, but still decidedly in Republicans' favor.
Hasn't it been close recently, though, between the parties? Yeah, I know,
yes.
The Democrats have talked
right.
about
and
flipping
that's,
Georgia.
That's what I was getting at there is the, Barack Obama, without putting a lot of money into here, then Senator Obama and later President Obama came to Atlanta many times to campaign and mostly to raise money. They didn't put a lot of money on the ground. He lost Georgia by 5 points in 2008 and by a slightly wider margin in 2012. Democrats in 2014, though, for instance, thought they had really, really strong candidates statewide. Jason Carter ran for governor. It's Jimmy Carter's grandson. Michelle Nunn ran for the U.S. Senate. Her father was Senator Sam Nunn, very popular figure. And they both lost by 8 points. So it has been close to competitive, but Democrats still haven't quite gotten there. So and Stacey's basically testing the idea. She's coming at this saying, look, we've tried it you know, Jason and Michelle tried to close the gap by convincing the people that used to vote for Sam Nunn and used to vote for Jimmy Carter and used to vote for Bill Clinton. She said, I think the way to close the gap is to bring new voters to the polls and tap into younger voters, more African-Americans, a growing Hispanic community, a growing Asian community. So she's kind of running on that lane, and we'll see how it goes.
That leads me to another question. What does running for governor look like in Georgia? What does somebody do in Georgia specifically when trying to win statewide office?
It is a combination of retail politics that are still important, but also still a big money, big organization game. And that includes both raising the kind of money it takes to go on television, and now in the 21st century campaigns, building out social media presence and online outreach. So it's really multifaceted.
When you say big organizations, do you mean like labor unions and that sort of thing?
Building out your campaign organization, simply because it is a big state, physically covers a lot of land area. This is one of the largest states east of the Mississippi. And population wise, there are now more than 10 million people here. So this is not the Georgia that elected Jimmy Carter governor in 1970. You know, the Metro Atlanta is, you know, about a 4 million people in a 10 county footprint. The huge 18 county MSA is about 6 million people. And then statewide is 10 million. So there's still like the small town feel in places where you do have to connect. You do have to travel, do the retail politicking, be seen, go to the small town newspapers, radio stations,
but to the fair,
to the county fairs. But you also still have to raise a lot of money and be on television to have any shot at winning a statewide.
Can you win in Georgia just by winning the cities? Can you win Metro Atlanta and that's enough?
I mean, mathematically, you could. The reality is that, like anywhere in the country, the urban core is heavily Democratic. That's true of every city in the United States. The small towns lean pretty heavily Republican. What in a state like Georgia that differentiates the outcomes here from, you know, maybe Pennsylvania or Chicago is that the suburbs here lean a little more Republican than in some of those other places. So where Stacey's going to have to win, she would have to maximize that, you know, Democratic friendly vote that she talks about. And she is traveling the state trying to win outside the metro areas and in the cities. But then she is going to need some people to flip. She's going to need some, you know, particularly white suburban women that get so much focus. And she'll have to kind of mix and match all of those pieces, I think, to put together a majority.
Like electoral Tetris.
Yes.
Okay. So the Republicans soon have a runoff election. Who are the people she could be facing, and how is she different from them?
Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle is a longtime figure at the Capitol. And he is sort of running as the Republican establishment figure, the Chamber of Commerce Republican, if you will. And then Brian Kemp is the Secretary of State. So also a known quantity, a statewide elected official, but who is taking in this era of Donald Trump, the decidedly Trumpian course of being the arch conservative. You know, he's got the guns in every ad and the pickup trucks and the chainsaws, and he's kind of playing up what some outsiders might write as the central casting stereotypical, you know, Georgia Republican. Brian Kemp is embracing that role with gusto.
Let's listen to one of those ads.
I'm Brian Kemp. I'm so conservative, I blow up government spending. I own guns that no one's taken away. My chainsaw's ready to rip up some regulations. I got a big truck, just in case I need to round up criminal illegals and take them home myself. Yep, I just said that. I'm Brian Kemp. If you want a politically incorrect conservative, that's me.
So they're fighting over Trumpiness. Mm-hmm. Is she running against Donald Trump?
She is not. She will be, when you talk to Stacey, she will openly criticize Trump on policy grounds. She has talked some about his tone, but her stump speech, her appeal before anyone starts asking questions, really doesn't get into Donald Trump at all. It doesn't talk about national politics much at all. She does talk about issues that play nationally, but it's you know, Medicaid expansion, investing in higher education and pre-K, investing in job training, and more rationally organizing the two-year schools to help produce jobs, and continuing criminal justice reform that the outgoing Republican administration here had worked on, and things like that. It's really a the way she talks about it, she acknowledges being kind of this nationally known candidate, a nationally recognized candidate for a host of reasons, because Georgia is a big state, a consequential state, because she has the potential to make history. But then she says, this is a locally based campaign, and I want to talk about issues that affect everyday people here in Georgia.
What challenges does she have apart from being a Democrat in a still Republican state? She has some financial issues. What other kinds of challenges is she facing personally?
Her opponent in the primary tried to hit her a lot of different ways. Ultimately, it didn't work, but she tried to hit her from the left and said that she cut too many deals with Republicans. That's something, frankly, that Stacey could try to make work for her and say, you're right, I did. I want to make government work. Even though I am a Democrat, I am a progressive. But I recognize that, you know, there are Republicans in Georgia that you have to work with if you want to get anything done. Now, whether she can make people believe that, that's an open question. She was also hit for, she has a negative net worth and is.
Meaning she has personal debt.
Yeah, just some personal debts. But her opponents are going to hammer her as irresponsible and she can't manage government. She's proven in her personal life and her business affairs, she has no business in running state government. She tries to turn that to an advantage and say, look, I have a law degree from Yale that cost a lot of money. I started with a lot of debt because I'm well-educated and I don't apologize for that. She also, she tells her family story. Her parents have had health problems. Her parents were educated, but were from a generation of African-Americans that always struggled financially and had several, she has several siblings and she has taken on financial responsibility, both with her parents' health, some of her parents' health problems, and I believe some nieces and nephews, just some that the children of some of her siblings.
And is that working for her, like as an American story? Basically?
You know, that's one of those open questions. That narrative, both sides, the attacks on her and her answer will play out through November and we'll see how it goes. But she doesn't run from it. I mean, she uses it to say, look, I think this is an asset. I can prove that I'm meeting my obligations. I do have debts. I pay them. I am in the process of paying them. These are what the debts are. And I think that makes me more empathetic to what most households in this state deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. You're listening to Ground Game. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Ground Game. We're joined by Bill Barrow, AP National Political Reporter, who's based in Atlanta. And we're also joined by Erin Haynes-Wack, AP's race and ethnicity writer, who it turns out is from Atlanta, although she's based in Philadelphia. Erin, in a piece you wrote recently about Stacey Abrams, you noted that Black women had the chance to vote for a candidate who looked like them. Can you talk about the role race plays in this campaign and among Democratic voters in Georgia?
Well, absolutely. As Bill mentioned, you know, Stacey Abrams is seeking to become not only the first Black woman elected governor in the country, but also the third Black person elected governor in America and the first Black person to be elected governor in Georgia. And so race is hugely important in this race. And as we're kind of focused on, you know, the year of the woman, a lot of people also see this as potentially the year of the Black woman. You know, the congressional.
Wait, can we back up a little bit when you talk about the year of the woman? What do you mean by that?
Just that there's a record number of women that are seeking office this midterm cycle, you know, in a variety of positions, not just in Congress, but for other statewide offices. And that, frankly, includes Black women. You know, you have the congressional and gubernatorial elections in 2017 in Alabama and Virginia, respectively, that helped to really put a spotlight on Black women as a crucial voting bloc headed into the 2018 cycle. But in reality, Black women have long been the super voters of the Democratic Party, turning out consistently in on and off year races, and in some cases even exceeding expected turnout. So Stacey Abrams is certainly hoping to harness some of that in Georgia.
So what about gender in addition to race?
Stacey Abrams got early support from Emily's List, which supports women candidates who are pro-choice. And she is also getting national support from groups like Higher Heights, which is an organization that supports Black women candidates of color. They're supporting a handful of folks, and certainly Abrams' race is the marquee race of the election cycle for them as well. And that's drawing national money as well as national attention. So gender is definitely playing a role.
Can you talk about her role as a Black woman nationally? She may not win, right? So what happens if she doesn't win? What is her role then as a symbol for this progressive Black women candidate?
Well, you know, I think she's already been a symbol. I mean, the state has never had, you know, an African-American general election candidate before this year. And so she's already made history. And just the way that she won as well. I mean, she won her primary election in May. She took 153 of Georgia's 159 counties, which was very impressive and certainly better than anybody assumed that she would do. And so I think the main thing is, you know, win or lose in November, what she has already shown and proven is that never again should it be said in Georgia and perhaps even across the Deep South and in other places that a Black candidate or a Black woman is not ready or capable of running statewide given the support and the resources.
Can you talk about the role, you've mentioned it previously a little bit, but can you talk about the role of Black women voters broadly in states like Georgia, but also where there are large African-American populations, but also just broadly for the Democratic Party across the country?
Black women are the voters that show up pretty much in every race and show up in big numbers. And they also bring people along, encourage other family members, friends, tap their networks, and encourage those people to vote. And so after the 2017 cycle, Black women got a lot of attention as voters. But, you know, their response to that is really that they're looking for more than just a thank you. And you mentioned this earlier, you know, many of them are seeking a seat at the table and also a chance to really vote for somebody who looks like them instead of, frankly, having to choose between the lesser of two evils, as has been the choice, or having to swoop in at the last minute as saviors of the party, which some people kind of saw their role as with the Alabama special congressional election last fall. But, you know, as both voters and candidates, Black women are just able to tap a variety of networks, especially cultural institutions like their churches and sororities. And many are also being bolstered by the creation of some new political action committees that are specifically aimed at Black candidates and galvanizing Black voters, especially through social media, a lot of whom are Black women.
Yeah, just to take it back even beyond 2017, those special elections that got so much attention. And if we go back to 2015 and 2016 in the presidential Democratic primary, there was all this attention, you know, on Iowa and New Hampshire and how Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton were playing in those two states, which, by the way, are overwhelmingly white. And there was a narrative out there that if you only spent time in Iowa and New Hampshire, it wasn't necessarily wrong, that said, you know, Hillary Clinton is having surprising trouble connecting with large parts of the electorate, you know, to be such an overwhelming establishment favorite in this big front runner. And I spent a lot of time in South Carolina in that time, which is holds the votes third in the Democratic pecking order. And it's the first primary in the South. And that was curious to South Carolina Democrats, where African-American women are the most important demographic, because they liked Hillary Clinton genuinely, not just were going to support her because they were Democrats and reliable voters. They connected with Hillary Clinton. I saw her speak.
And had history with her and her husband, frankly.
Yes, and had history there. Yes. And you saw what happened. The narrative completely changed, first in Iowa, which was an essential draw. And then Bernie really beat Hillary in New Hampshire badly. And everybody was overcorrecting to this, oh, is she in trouble? She in trouble. And what she did is she turned around and just waxed Bernie in South Carolina and the rest of the South. And she had Black women the entire time. It's just a lot of people weren't paying attention to that. Go back 8 years before, and those African-American women liked Hillary a lot, but they had the opportunity to vote for the man that would become the first Black president. And Barack Obama, who won Iowa, then lost to Hillary in New Hampshire, came down to South Carolina and won big, and then won the South. And both times, what you had in both of those presidential races, the ultimate nominee in an otherwise competitive primary cycle lost the cumulative white vote nationally among Democrats, but won the Black vote so solidly, primarily on the strength of Black women, that they won the nomination anyway. Barack Obama in 2008, Hillary Clinton in 2016.
That's absolutely right, Bill. And just to underscore that, I mean, when we're talking about black voters, who we mainly are talking about is black women. I mean, black women make up the majority of black voters for a variety of reasons, including felon disenfranchisement of black men who are not able to vote in some states, you know, after having been incarcerated. But black women consistently, I mean, even going back to before 2008, are the ones that show up, but voted in record numbers for Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton.
In general, do they feel like they've been taken for granted by the party?
Well, there certainly was that feeling after the 2016 election, you know, because there was so much focus on white women, frankly. And, you know, we get to Election Day and find out that 53% of white women supported Donald Trump. And, you know, black women overwhelmingly supported Hillary Clinton. And yet they were not the ones who, you know, were heavily courted, you know, during the general election. And frankly, you know, their vote, because it is so dependable, has sometimes not been front and center, you know, when it comes to their issues and really campaigning to them, because they feel like that's a vote that they're just going to get because they usually do get.
So to come back to Stacey Abrams, then, how does a candidate who looks like those women, you know, even if she doesn't win, she becomes a symbol of their voice or their ability to speak for themselves? How does that play out nationally?
For Abrams, you know, she certainly is aware of you know, the possibility of her making history, even as she does have to campaign statewide in a state race. I mean, at the end of the day, like Bill said, this is a local election, not a national one, even though it is drawing the national spotlight. But at the same time, she does have endorsements from people like, you know, California Democratic Senator Kamala Harris, who's been spotted on the campaign trail and is also seen as a possible 2020 candidate coming in and stumping for her. And so, you know, I think what that's doing for a lot of black women, whether they are in Georgia or beyond, is showing them, you know, the possibility here, showing them somebody who is viable, who is going to be competitive. I mean, she just, Abrams just reported her most successful fundraising quarter yet. So she's going to be able to compete against whichever one of the Republican candidates emerges from the upcoming runoff.
Stacey won't talk in these terms, obviously. She's in it to win. But I think if you do look at this, if she goes out and only gets 45 or 46% of the vote, that means the turnout and the margin looks basically like it did in 2014. And you just, Democrats go back to the drawing board in Georgia, and maybe it kind of deflates the balloon a little bit nationally. But if she can even up that total and lose a two or three point race in a state that's still fundamentally to the Republican advantage, then that sets a new benchmark, and that tells donors and that tells top talent in the consulting world and the staff world, and it tells other legislative leaders and business leaders in other states around the country, if I'm an ambitious black woman, I don't have to be scared to put myself out there and run for statewide office. And Stacey makes it easier for the next crop of candidates to come along, possibly even herself in the future. I mean, she's 44 years old. This doesn't have to be her last statewide run, even if she loses. And again, Stacey's not going to say that, and I don't think any politician in her position would. But I think from the sidelines, we can look at it that way and say if she gets, you know, a 48, 49% mark beyond what even Barack Obama got here in 2008, then that's doing something.
Aaron, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely true. And I mean, obviously, again, because of the historic nature of this race, she's getting a lot of attention, but she is part of a national conversation with other black women, you know, running for office across the country, a lot of them running to really represent very diverse constituencies. I would also mention that this election cycle coincides with the 50th anniversary of the groundbreaking candidacy of Shirley Chisholm, somebody who didn't necessarily look the way that you know, a congressperson was supposed to look in 1968, but who nonetheless became the first black woman elected to Congress that year from the state of New York. And so, you know, what you have now, you have people being inspired by Shirley Chisholm's candidacy, but also by the current moment. You've got, for example, in Iowa, you've got a Secretary of State candidate, Deidre DeGeer, who's running. Lucy McBath down in Georgia, who's the mother of slain black teenager Jordan Davis. She's in the upcoming runoff. as well later this month. Pioneering Boston City Councilwoman Ayanna Pressley, who's in a primary running for Congress in the Massachusetts 7th. And Lauren Underwood, who is a nurse and a first-time candidate seeking to unseat a Republican incumbent in Illinois. So all of these Black women are part of a national conversation that is really kind of exciting Black women in an off-year election in a way that I don't think that we've seen in quite a while. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that does affect turnout come November, because GOTV efforts, at least this summer, are definitely the name of the game.
GOTV being Get Out the Vote.
Absolutely.
Yes, they're definitely talking about it as a turnout election for sure on both sides. We've been talking to Bill Barrow, based in Atlanta, and Aaron Haynes-Wack, who's based in Philadelphia. Thank you both for joining us and for your insights.
Glad to do it.
Thank you for having me. Always good to chat with another Southerner.
I'm Megan Crane, and this is Ground Game. Our show is produced in Washington by Kevin Venese. We want to hear from you. You can reach us on Twitter and Instagram at APGroundGame or on email at groundgame@ap.org. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.